there, and welcome back to another episode of Control Alt Azure. I'm Tobias, and I'm back again with UC. What's up?
Hey, Tobias. Great news, at least for me. In early 2024, I'm not sure if I mentioned this, possibly not, but in early 2024, I started to get a bit of pain in my hamstring, and it sort of expanded from there throughout my left leg. So I did what all men in my age, 46, do. I tried stretching. I tried not doing anything. I was not on the sofa. It didn't really do anything on it. So I did a couple of visits to different occupational health doctors, couple of visits to an osteopath and different people, and nothing sort of fixed the problem. And then a friend of mine referred me to a physiotherapist, and my sort of understanding on what they do is mostly that they tell you, yeah, you need to stretch more, and then you're fixed. So I go in there having watched at least 30 different YouTube videos and giving my careful self-diagnosis of my problems. She listens, she goes, yeah, but no, that's not the problem you have. And turns out she asked me, Jussi, have you ever been in an accident? I'm like, no, never. Never? I'm like, oh yeah, 12 years ago I fell when I was rock climbing. I fell about 6 meters quite badly, and it took me about 6-8 weeks to recover from that. It was like, yeah, so let's have a look at that. Turns out that my posture and how I position myself when I'm standing was altered after that climbing accident. And I've been working incorrectly for the past 12, 13 years. So now I'm mostly pain-free. My posture is a little bit different, but I've been spending the last couple of weeks learning to walk again. It feels funny to say this because I've been able to walk for the past 46 years, but learning to walk again, and it's been fun. So that's what I've been doing for the past couple of weeks. How about you?
Well, you make me feel old now when you say that. After 40, as everyone does, you start doing stretches and, you know, to ease up the pain and this and that. And I have exactly the same in my left hamstring that I need to go do exercises now. The one thing you mentioned that I haven't tried is go to the sofa and lie down and then get off the sofa again. I'm going to go try lay down on the sofa today for some time and see if it helps. For me, life is busy. I am planning my 40-year-old party. I'm renovating the kitchen. I'm supposedly getting married this summer. I'm making good progress in my general career, planning a getaway over the Eastern holiday, and that's coming up now. And then I'm managing the family every day with the two small kids and all that. So I didn't have much time to do anything other than that since we last spoke here. So it's the highway of life right now for me, which is really fun. There's not a lot of kind of moments where I go, hey, I'm just going to watch 3 hours of Netflix or something like that. It's full steam ahead with precisely everything in life right now. And I quite enjoy it. It's a nice period of my life. And I do get some exercise in there as well to figure out why my left hamstring is acting up. So that's all good.
Sounds busy. And I can definitely share the sentiment. These are the busy years, not for nothing. For me, it's easing up quite a bit nowadays, but I do recall what it was with the super busy times at times. So today we are talking about checking out Azure Storage Actions. A friend of mine and a frequent listener to the show, hi Panu, pointed me to this casually over a WhatsApp conversation. He was asking, hey Jussi, have you used this one? And I was like, I've never even heard about this. Toby, what's your experience with Azure Storage Actions?
So I think this is a great episode to do because, like you said, someone pointed this out to you and you said, hey, what is this? Let's take a look. That's exactly what both of us did. We took a look at Azure Storage Actions. It's a preview service right now. It's like the next level of Azure Storage Lifecycle Management, if you will. So we'll touch on that a little bit later. But essentially a way to say, whenever something happens in my storage account, there's an action that needs to be taken. So I did take a look at it. I did try it out. One thing to be aware of is it's a preview product right now. It's in preview. And it only works in France Central and Canada Central. Those are the two supported regions right now, as of this recording, as of this week. That will change as the preview matures and as it goes into GA or general availability, whenever that happens. But that is also good to understand and know about. Because when I first tried it out, I tried to create a task, a storage task. We'll talk about those in a second. And then I wanted to assign those to my storage account and say, okay, now apply these things. So I have a rule set applied to my storage account. But then it said, yeah, actually, you can't do that because your storage account is in West Europe and this thing is not supported in that region. So that's good to know, like before we dive into the episode and you might think, hey, this is something I want to try out on some of our stuff. Know about that very limited constraint on the region. So France Central and Canada Central are the two kind of supported regions right now. Have you taken this first spin yet?
No, but I did what every true consultant is capable of doing. I did a quick search, found the Microsoft Learn documentation for this, skimmed through the overview page in about 12 seconds, sort of internalized, okay, there's this sort of serverless framework capability, I am good. So whenever somebody is asking about, could we do this in Azure Storage? Now I sort of have this building block in my head. I haven't really used that, but I have this inkling of knowledge that I think I can apply fairly confidently in an upcoming project. When you said this is only available in France Central and was it Canada East? Canada something.
Canada Central.
Canada Central. Yep. I've never deployed anything to France Central. My fear is that I deploy something in there, my Azure portal becomes Le Portal, and I have no idea how I get back.
Yeah. So like diving into a little bit of why anyone would want to take a look at this. So we'll take a look at like how you create this and you know what are the components involved. But just before that, I want to briefly touch on a couple of use cases that I found. There's an announcement article. We'll put the link to that in the show notes. You can go check that out. So there's a couple of kind of use cases from that. And then, you know, a couple of additional thoughts here. It's a way to kind of minimize effort to automate common data management tasks. So if there's things you want to do with your storage account multiple times, or if you want to apply the same set of logic to multiple storage accounts or to all your storage accounts, you can do that. So if this happened, then do this, take this action. So again, it's called Azure Storage Actions. So you can set up conditions. So if you want to do things at scale, if you want to automate things for your storage, this is a really interesting service to take a look at. You can minimize overhead in provisioning or managing infrastructure if there's a specific set of things you need to do. You can simplify reuse by enabling this. So you create this kind of task definition once, and a task definition, again, we'll talk about that in a bit. It's a way to define, this is my task. You know, this is the action. Whenever this condition is met, this is the operation we should execute. This is kind of the boundaries of what should happen. Then you can apply that to many storage accounts. You can really, you know, scale your automation, if you will. It also helps you encourage consistency in the use of blob tags and metadata in conditions and operations. Which is another kind of benefit if you want to automate things. One thing where I looked into it, coming from many of the use cases that I used to have operating, you know, distributed kind of cloud services rolled out across the globe, is retention and expiration policies. So here you have a little bit evolved if you compare it to the lifecycle management capabilities in Azure Storage. Here you have a little bit evolved rules and conditions you can set up. So around retention and expiration, you can do that based on object tags as an example, or based on when was this last access, or you know, if this whatever condition is, we'll read through some of the conditions in a bit. You can set up better retention and expiration policies. So should it be deleted? Actually, should it be undeleted? Because you can also do that. Like one of the actions is if this happened, if someone deleted your storage blob and this condition was met, you can undelete it. So there's a bunch of things you can do around that. But also things like one-off processing of blobs at scale, and we're talking billions of objects. So if you, for example, rehydrate from an archive and you want to retag or reset tags or clean up redundant or outdated data sets, you know, to start removing stuff, you can do that as well using these things. I haven't tried this at scale. I've only tried it, you know, in one of my small subscriptions. But supposedly, according to the announcement, it should work on billions of objects if you want to really operate at scale, which is nice because then this happens server side, right, in Azure. So you don't have to use an API and say, hey, get my storage connection and then, you know, apply these things and then run through all the, you know, get all the items and process them and upload them again. You can just apply a kind of a rule or a condition or an action and say, here's what I want to happen. If it falls within the boundaries of what you can actually do here, I think that's a great option because you don't have to do the kind of back and forth round trip. Those just a couple of top of mind use cases based on what I see when I take a look at this.
We've talked about Azure storage in a couple of episodes in the past, and I think I mentioned that it's definitely one of the oldest services in Azure, and it's ready. So there's going to be new innovation, but the core features are already there. So I'm looking at the guidance on Microsoft Learn, and there's a couple of screenshots, and you can find the links in the show notes. There's a couple of screenshots, and I don't typically sort of internalize or read through all the screenshots because it's typically a snippet from Azure Portal that I've seen 2 million times already. So it's enough for me. But now I stopped looking at how you're supposed to create an Azure storage action. And there's a screenshot from Azure Portal where you have the different tabs for provisioning something in true ClickOps style. Nothing fancy about this, but the explanation for creating a task for Azure Storage Action, a task that will do something. The explanation says that Azure Storage Actions are part of an intelligent data framework, IDF, designed to provide customers extensible data management capabilities that can serve as a foundation for AI ops. And that's quite a bit on something relatively simple. Do something in a serverless fashion, but now it's part of AI ops, part of intelligent data framework. Looks so much more enterprisey. And this is not to mock this. I do appreciate that there's more depth, more capabilities coming for something as gray and boring as Azure Storage usually is in a project. But I do appreciate this new capability. So, Toby, I know you had a look at this more in depth. I had this consultant's look, briefly skimming through the screenshots. How do you create this? Is it just Azure Portal, pick a storage account, and there's a new button in there, or somehow else?
Yeah, there is that. So in your actual storage account, you can go and find you know, the assignments to the actions. But there's also, if you go to the portal and you search for storage tasks or Azure Storage Actions in the search bar, you're going to get that preview service where you then see like all the storage tasks. And from there, you can create a storage task because, like I mentioned before, you can create one task and then you can just assign it to multiple storage accounts. So you don't have to start from your one storage account. You can just go here and say, hey, here's a general rule I want to set up or a general type of action that I want to apply to multiple things. But you can also go the other way around. Like you mentioned, go to your actual storage account where you want this to happen. And then from there, you can go and create things. But from there, I think you can assign. I'm not sure if you can create the actual task from there or if you can only assign existing tasks. But regardless, if you just go to the portal and search for Azure Storage Actions, you'll be able to create the tasks from there. What I like about that is there are three things related to like storage tasks management, if you will. It's the conditions that you set up, it's the assignments where you want this to apply, and then, you know, getting insights, monitoring, getting to see the task runs and stuff like that. So just going into one of these things, I'm actually in the Azure portal right now and creating a task. What I really like about this is the way you can create these things is you get like a condition where you get to define when this should happen. So just to give an example of that is it's like if then, like if this happened, then take this action. So you can check blob properties, and that is things like when was it deleted, if it was deleted, is the version current? Those are like Boolean properties, yes, no. So that will be if this is a yes or if this is a no or true or false, then take this action. There's datetime properties, which is access to your change time, creation time, deleted time, last access time, last modified time. So if you want to do something with any of the datetime properties, like it was deleted within this time or it was last accessed more than 365 days ago, I want to delete it because we just want to make sure we have a clean slate. And for your specific business case and application, it might be that any blob that hasn't been used in a year will never be used again. Now, of course, this will depend on your application use cases and business cases. You also have numeric properties like the content length. How big is the blob? How many tags do you have? What is the access tier? What is the blob name, blob type, the metadata applied, the container name, the tag value? So kind of all the metadata that you have on the blob, you can check those actions as well. So that could be like if the tag value equals something. So imagine you have a system that create blobs, and when it create a blob with a specific tag like financial data or financial outcome or, you know, whatever it might be, then you might want to take a specific action. So in my case, I set it up like the last access time. If the blob has not been accessed for a year, I'm just going to go and delete it. But the operations here, there's a bunch of different operations. And again, I'm doing all of this from the Azure portal. You can delete the blob. You can set a new blob expiry date. You can set the immutable policies, legal holds, you know, change the tags, set new tags, set the blob tier. And so, hey, let's move this to cool storage, to archive, to hot storage, whatever you want. Or you can just undelete it. So if you have a condition saying, hey, a blob was actually deleted and it looks like blah, 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 and you might add a new clause saying, and it's got this tag. So if a blob was deleted and it has the financial tag, then undelete it because we never delete those. Everything else can be deleted. So there's a bunch of versatile options you have here. And again, I'm just running through these so you can compare this to Azure Storage Lifecycle Management that we are used to having, which is slightly different. So what happens then is you set up this thing either in the UI in the browser, which I did, or you can also go to a code view. So you can define it in code if you want to do that instead. Which might make it easy to kind of repurpose if you've created one and you just want to jump over to create a new one. You can copy paste that and then you can modify whatever you want in the Visual Designer as well. When you've created it, you go and assign it. And you can just create an assignment. Again, you can go through the Azure Storage Actions and create an assignment or go to your storage account and say, hey, assign an action. But again, coming back to what I mentioned in the beginning, right now, as of this week, only two regions are supported. So here's where I failed initially because my storage account was in West Europe and I tried to assign a storage task that I created in Central France or France Central. That didn't work. So I would have to create then a new storage account in France Central and then try it out. So if you want to try it out, that's what you have to think about. If you have an existing system or a dev environment or a proof of concept or a UAT environment, whatever it is, and you want to try this out, and your region is not currently supported, then you're going to have to wait, or you're going to have to kind of set up a new test account to try it out. So that's what you can do from the browser. You can do all of these things. And then, of course, you can add monitoring. You can check out the task runs. The things that I really find interesting is the monitoring, of course. I love monitoring. It's a kind of key component to everything you deploy in the cloud because you want to make sure everything is healthy. But also the task runs, kind of if you've used flows in Power Automate and you set up a bunch of things that just fire and forget, you want to make sure that they actually do fire properly and that they have a successful status code. So you can check that as well. So you can see the task runs. Okay, this task ran this time and it was successful. Awesome. Because if it's not successful, you need to go and take action on that as well. So there's a bunch of kind of insights that you get also from the browser UI directly on these things.
Lots of interesting thoughts come to mind on this one. I did find a couple of limitations beyond the regions that you mentioned already. So during the preview, you can do up to 100 storage tasks per subscription, or up to 50 task assignments per storage task. So I'm not sure if these are super tough limits or no, but 100 tasks per subscription sounds like plenty enough to me, because this is all relatively new, and I'm quite sure once this is generally available, that the limit will be higher. In addition to this one, I did see a sort of a promise or a hint that beyond just using Azure Portal to provision these, you can use all the usual candidates, Azure CLI, the REST endpoints. But I couldn't find any documentation for those just yet. So even if the guidance now is instructing you through Azure Portal to create these tasks and to provision them, I feel that they will be natively supported through IAC using Bicep or ARM, and through the usual tooling you would use for automation and your typical DevOps pipelines and workflows. But for now, I'm not seeing any guidance on how you would do that. And lastly, there's support for Azure Event Grid, meaning that once an event in your actions has completed, you can then use Azure Event Grid to subscribe your Azure Functions, Logic Apps, or something else to pick up on that event and maybe react and do something after that one. So I feel that like this is something that fills a fairly narrow gap that we've had, so that you don't have to spin up your custom Azure Functions to do something specific. But then we also talked a little bit about lifecycle management, which has been available for quite some time already. And for me, lifecycle management has always been this sort of scheduled, automated cleanup service. If there's a blob in my Azure storage that I haven't touched in 365 days, let's move that blob from hot to cold, or from hot to archive, or something else, sort of clean up the blobs. And I feel with storage actions, we get a little bit more, but we could still use lifecycle management on top of this as well. Any thoughts, opinions? If you were using lifecycle management now, would you migrate to storage actions fully, or would you sort of continue using both of these?
I think that's a great question. For me, it's pricing, the pricing point, and the use case. So if what you have today works and it's fully supported, because that's like the lifecycle management capabilities, these are in GA, they're in production, they're working, don't change it if it works. And unless you see that when this hits GA, if you're gonna save 50% of the cost of storage transactions because of that, okay, now we're talking about some that might be interesting. But for me, it's always the business use case. Why does it matter to the business? I don't particularly see it as a technical benefit, let's go, but more, will it help my business? Is it gonna reduce the cost? Is it gonna increase reliability? Is it gonna give me any of the benefits over what I'm using today? So again, if the kind of, if you wanna say limited, conditions you have with lifecycle management is already good enough, it's getting the job done, then I wouldn't change anything. But if I want to elaborate on those things and say, hey, if, like I mentioned, a use case, like if a financial blob comes in with a tag financial and someone deletes that and it still has the tag financial document or whatever it might be, undelete it. That's a rule I want to have, then I would start doing that. And one thing doesn't exclude the other, I think, here. So you might still have, lifecycle management things applied to some of your storage accounts. And then some of your applications might say, well, actually, we're going to benefit better from this new capability because we can work more on the metadata. We can work more on the conditions and more in-depth conditions and then take actions. And like you mentioned here, the integration with Event Grid. So Azure Event Grid events are being, you can subscribe to those. Because I think, like you mentioned, Azure Storage Actions events are pushed automatically to Azure Event Grid. And then you can kind of subscribe that with functions, logic apps, or, you know, whatever HTTP listener that you have. So if you want to, you know, dive into it and you say, hey, actually, we've got this system over here that is listening to these types of events, and we want to get these signals in to our reporting dashboard, whatever it is that you have over here to take action on. Okay, cool. Let's do that. But again, coming back to the business case. So I know that was a long answer to a short question. Would you use this over the other? There is no easy answer there. Again, bringing the consulting hat, but also like the business hat. If I'm a decision maker today in my business, I never make a decision based on technology alone. I make a decision based on if it makes sense for the business. Will we save money? Will we increase security, reliability? Does it meet the ROI targets we have with the cloud? All of these things matter. I know that's not the kind of Boolean yes or no answer to the question, but I think that's important things to kind of weigh into that discussion, because there is no easy answer to say, drop everything and start doing this. But there are very many, you know, a good set of interesting use cases for starting to use this.
I like the thoughtful approach here. I did have a look at pricing, because typically you want to know what this will eventually cost you if you opt in to invest your time and efforts in using something in a preview. Right now, it's free during the preview. And once this is generally available, pricing will be announced. So we don't know in practice what the cost of using this would be. But if you use this now, the actual capability is free, but any transactions that you invoke through this will obviously be billable on top of your storage account. So typically, when I think about storage accounts and cost in production environments, it's not top of mind. Obviously, I do some design and planning for that. But compared to anything else, maybe you have a Kubernetes cluster, maybe you have complex workflows, loads of virtual machines, they incur majority of the cost typically. And something in storage account, it's not meaningless, but it's not the main element that is spiking your bills. So for this, I'm sort of silently hoping that whenever the pricing is revealed, it's something small that I don't have to worry about it too often. Anything yep. else that we didn't touch yet on Azure Storage Actions?
Yeah, I think those are really good reflections, and it's going to be interesting to see the pricing points. And just to touch on that, I have, when I was operating the distributed systems in the cloud, I hit a mine a couple of times where the storage transaction fees are getting ridiculous when you go cross region. So if you go outside of the region, you know, you automatically get a transaction fee. But if you stay within the region, you don't get the transaction fee. So we went from almost free storage accounts to thousands of dollars a month just because we enable a specific capability that kind of shipped logs or things between regions. So always look out for that and make sure when the billing information becomes available, take a look at what that actually means. I think the one final thing for me is authorization. Like what's required to actually get these things done? So you can assign a storage task to any storage account where your identity is assigned the storage blob data owner role. And then you can create assignments based on that. So all of this uses RBAC or role-based access control. You can also use system assigned managed identities of the task. So when you set up a task, you can create a managed identity for how and where it needs access. Just to know that it's not, you set up a task and then it's got global admin rights to delete all the blobs in your subscription, right? It's still RBAC, role-based access control. You can still define these things. So just want to mention that as well. Take a look at the use cases you have and, you know, define the permission and access structure based on your business requirements and application requirements. And then that's it. You can kind of limit the scope of impact or the scope of execution based on that. But I think that was my final kind of thoughts on this.
Yeah, and looking at the RBAC, they have listed the custom or the RBAC actions if you want to create a custom role. So instead of giving the storage blob data owner to an identity that you plan on using, you can just pick and choose the individual actions if you want to go with the true least privileged access. Alrighty, have a look at Azure Storage Actions. We have the links in the show notes. And the last bit I have is the unexpected question for you, Toby. Are you ready?
Okay, let's go.
What is Azure's favorite movie?
So I've got a couple of answers top of mind here, but let's go with a simple one. So instead of Star Wars, it's going to be Server Wars, The Empire Writes Back, because we're talking about data. So maybe that is Azure's favorite movie this week.
I like this. If I had to think what it would be, there's a classic Finnish movie from 1996 called Drifting Clouds. I think that would be it. Alrighty. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.
All right. See you then.